1936. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sukarajam
Ritubir
Ananya Sharanam Devi Kritagya Kona Sevata Durarajam Ashaduvi Tam Sukarajam Ritubir Ananya Sharanir Nribhi Vitagya Ko Nasivata Durarajam Asarubir. Such a great master as the personality of Godhead. The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to Him for protection, though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate Him. Please repeat. What grateful soul is there?
What grateful soul is there?
Who would not render his loving service?
Who would not render his loving service?
To such a great master.
To such a great master.
As the personality of Godhead.
As the personality of Godhead.
The Lord can be easily pleased.
The Lord can be easily pleased.
By spotless devotees.
By spotless devotees.
Who resort exclusively to Him.
Who resort exclusively to Him.
For protection.
For protection.
Though the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him, but appointed by his divine grace, he Srimad-Bhagavatam Swami Prabhupada. Every living entity, especially persons in the human race, must feel grateful for the benedictions offered by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness, must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. Those who are actually thieves and rogues do not recognize or acknowledge the benedictions offered to them by the Supreme Lord, and they cannot render Him devotional service. Ungrateful persons are those who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord. They enjoy the sunshine and moonshine, and they get water free of charge. Yet, they do not feel grateful, but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore, they must be called thieves and rogues. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyanam Janasokaya Chakshuriditam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Maha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasa Shri Gaura Bhakti Vrinda.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare
Hare. Hare Krishna. Let me just say what a pleasure it is to be here at the foot of Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan. I was speaking with the Indian ambassador to Hungary, who's since been retired and now a new person has come to have not met. But I was talking to him and I'm repeating something that I heard in a conversation in Mumbai, 1977, between a Bhagavatam scholar who came to visit Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, and the scholar was saying something very interesting, which I couldn't necessarily find in the Bhagavatam. But he was defining India as that place where Krishna is worshipped. So he said, but you've taken Krishna worship all over the world. Therefore, you've re-established Bharatvarsh, in other words, you've made the whole world into India. So I told the Indian ambassador that. I said, you know where India is? And he just sort of looked at me, of course I know where India is. And I said, no. I said, India is not just that subcontinent, that geographic subcontinent. India is wherever Krishna is worshipped. And that's what Shastra says. Now, Krishna's worshipped all over the world. So now the whole world is India. That part he liked. I said, but you know who did it? He says, Srila Prabhupada did that. So you should all recognize that he's the greatest ambassador of Indian everything. He's, again, made the whole world into India, just like Yudhisthira Maharaj did. This verse is continuing from Sukha Goswami after we've heard of the killing of Hiranyaksha. Sukha Goswami continues and he's talking, he gives the false duty. This is more or less a Palstuti. Palstuti means what is the fruit of a recitation. And Bhagavatam has mixed fruits. Actually, it only has one fruit, which is prema. But sometimes in order to induce people to hear Bhagavatam, then they hear other things. You become very wealthy. You become the king of the world. You can become free of sinful reaction. But ultimately, all of the benefits of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is to develop love for Krishna. Kimba pare, and then you don't. Nothing else is required other than that. So always the benefit is that by hearing, then what is the particular result? And I didn't even look to see what the result is. Well, here. This most sacred narrative confers extraordinary merit, wealth, fame, longevity, and all objects of one's desire. On the field of battle, it promotes the strength of one's vital organs and organs of action. One who listens to it at the last moment of his life is transferred to the supreme abode of the Lord. This is a very interesting thing. Even when you hear Hiranyaksha's name, you still go back to Godhead because you're also hearing Bhakti Lord Vara. And this verse, which I looked to see who quotes this verse, and in Bhaktisandarbha, Jiva Goswami has quoted it twice. And it's as well as some other acharyas, and it is in the category of padasevanam. So it's described that this verse talks about that principle of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, bandham, sakyam, atmanivedanam. And the sequence is given here. The reason why they're named like that is that there is actually a sequence of evolution or sequence of development. Here, Sukha Goswami is saying, what did he hear of hearing? This was earlier in verse 33. What to hear, what to speak of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, whose justice marked with Shuvatsa, people make a great transcendental pleasure in hearing of the works and deeds of the devotees. Yesterday, which unfortunately I wasn't here for class, my apologies, personality of God had delivered the king of elephants who was attacked by an alligator who meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Everything starts with hearing, therefore, in the sequence of those nine items, the list starts with Shravanam, because if you don't hear then you don't know anything. Although Kirtanam maybe or Yuga Dharma, but nonetheless, unless you've heard the Kirtan, you haven't been able to chant it. What to speak of then, knowing how to chant it. So, from Shravanam, then the natural sequence is Kirtanam. Kirtan is not mentioned here, but then it's explicit. And by Kirtan, if one chants nicely, then naturally one will be inclined to remember Krishna. So from Shravanam, Kirtanam, then there will come Smaranam, remembering Krishna. And when you remember Krishna, then Padasevanam. And Padasevanam, Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport to the verse, Shravanam Kirtanam verse, as a very intense desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Which means itself, serving Krishna's lotus feet, that is, massaging the lotus feet of the Lord. But it also unpacks a whole list of other items in addition to that. Doing parikrama, seeing the deity form of the Lord, touching the deity, touching the lotus feet of the deity, even touching one's head to the deity. That's also there by Rupa Goswami as one of the lists to the deity's lotus feet. And parikrama comes in the category of padasevanam, visiting holy places and bathing in the waters of holy places, Gangasnana, bathing in the Jamuna. This is all part of one of the angas of padasevanam. And then tadiyanam samarchanam. So Lord Vishnu, or Lord Shiva explains that, yes, aradhanam, that this is the best form of worship. This tadiyya. And tadiyya is Srila Prabhupada almost always emphasizes worship of devotees or service to Vaishnavas. So we see here's this nine, and yet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Sadasanga Nama Kirtan Bhagavata Shravanam Uturavasa, Sri Murti of Shravanasivana. He selects five most important. So there's Sadasanga, association of Vaishnavas. Comes under the category of Shravanam, comes under the category of Padasevanam. Of course, in Sankirtan, Sankirtan is also there. That's done in the association of Vaishnavas. But service to Vaishnavas is probably the most essential of these items. So an intense attachment to serving the feet of the Lord. Intensity is a very subjective thing. Everyone may feel it for themselves. How intense is our attachment to serve Krishna? If it's not intense enough, then Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. As one meditates on the Lord, then naturally it should arise. It doesn't always arise. And it's very interesting, of course, that although technically speaking, for instance, Rupa Goswami gives five different types of rasas, beginning with Shantaras, and Shantaras has a neutral form of prema, or love for Krishna. So Shantabhaktas, yogis who meditate on the opulence and the greatness of Lord Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't actually list them. When he's talking to Rupa Goswami, he's talking to about four. It starts with Dasya. And Srila Prabhupada says as much in Nectar of Devotion, because ultimately this idea of smaran, that I'm just absorbed in meditating on the Lord, Sanatana Goswami elaborates on this in great detail in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So you know Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why are you meditating on Him? Why aren't you serving Him? And so even though, and of course there's all types of variety of love for Krishna, all types of attachment, and these Santa Bhaktas also exist in the spiritual world. But interestingly enough, I don't know about Maharaj where, I think it's probably Jiva Goswami says, that although they're in the spiritual world, they're not in Krishna's Leela. Is that right?
Well, they don't serve.
They don't serve, so they're not actively engaged in Leela. In other words, they're observers. They're observers from a distance. So, perfection, but still bereft of certain other aspects of perfection that some other more perfected souls relish. So that smarnam, that remembrance, if we're actually remembering Krishna, if we're hearing about Krishna, it should end up in service. Here, then, this then becomes the subject matter of this soul. What grateful soul is there who would not render loving service to such a great master as the personality of God? Have you heard about him? You're chanting his names. You recognize the greatness of the Lord, the sweetness of the Lord, his beauty, his opulence and strength, and so on. So why not serve? And then, of course, here it's very stated, he's an unrighteous person. An unrighteous person will not serve the Lord. So by no means are the perfected souls, say, in Goloka unrighteous. But at least here in this world, we find that there are those who are unrighteous. And in the context here, it would be fair to understand unrighteous as being someone who's ungrateful. And that is what Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport as well. So those who are ungrateful to Krishna find it difficult to propitiate him. Srila Prabhupada seems to be kinder in the translation than in the word for word, because in the word for word he says impossible. And here he says, although dur, Tudaratham, dur means very difficult, not necessarily impossible, but almost next to impossible. And why? Because it's a very, this ungratefulness, even the earth planet finds it very difficult to tolerate. I can tolerate anything and anybody, but an ungrateful person, and unfortunately, in our modern day, there are so many ungrateful persons. So, of course, being ungrateful means that you know what is being grateful. And Srila Prabhupada here in the purport explains gratefulness. When you're benefited by someone, anyone, then you want to reciprocate with that. Krishna says, "Jeevitam prapadyanti." Similarly, every human being, at least should be, that should be their nature, is they also reciprocate with what they've received. And when you don't reciprocate with what you receive, when you're just a taker, then that's being ungrateful. So, kritagya, a grateful soul. Just towards, after Krishna finally appeared, when he left the gopis, and then when he reappeared, then their mind became a little disturbed, and they were questioning Krishna, why do you do this? And they used the word apitagya. So, indirectly, they're saying, are you ungrateful? We're giving up everything, and then you don't reciprocate with us. Why is it to do that? And of course, that's a very wonderful exchange where Krishna is explaining that. But Krishna says, he lists off different types of people, and he says, but there's one type of person who by nature is akritagya. He's an ungrateful person. And someone who's ungrateful is certainly unrighteous. In other words, someone who can't reciprocate with what he receives from other people is a very unfortunate person. And here, as stated here, it becomes very difficult for him to actually worship the Lord. So he doesn't advance in Krishna consciousness. Very often it can be found, especially if we look in the realm of Vaishnavas or amongst Vaishnavas, it's due to offenses. This type of ungratefulness is one of the five results or five consequences of aparad or offense. So, of course, that's a whole different subject matter. But why would someone be so ungrateful? It's not really the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is Nitya Krishna Das, is to serve Krishna, is to reciprocate. In fact, pure devotional service is not even just a matter of reciprocating. Prahlad Maharaj even told Lord Nrisimhadev directly, I'm not a merchant, I'm not serving you, or I don't want anything in reciprocation. And of course that's what the last verse of Shikshashtakam is about. It doesn't matter whether you trample me, whether you embrace me. I'm always your eternal servant and you're always my master. And that's a very unique feature of Krishna consciousness and pure devotional service. There's this very beautiful verse of Rupa Goswami, which I can't remember, but paraphrasing the translation, he says, whether he's the Lord of Vaikuntha or an ordinary man, whether he's very, very kind or cruel at every moment, and then he gives some other contrasting things, still Krishna is my only worshipable Lord. So very interesting. He may be God, he may be an ordinary person, he may be very kind, he may be very cruel. It doesn't matter. My business is to serve him because that's what I am. Nitya Krishna Das. I may serve him. But still, somehow or another, conditioned souls become covered and they become ungrateful. Here, Srila Prabhupada is reflecting one of the causes for that ungratefulness is the lack of culture and lack of education in the present world, which is an atheistic, materialistic world. God doesn't exist. And the materialists say it straight out, the religionists, they say it indirectly, but they're saying the same thing. My personal experience over the years of interfaith dialogue, speaking, sometimes debating with other religious leaders, ultimately, when you come down to it, is God a person? No. Well, then he's not God. So they have faith in God, but that faith is not actually in a supreme personality of Godhead, or not what the implication of God means, which is Janadiya Sajataha. He's the source of everything, therefore whatever you see is in him, including form, personality, and so on. And this type of materialistic training or brainwashing makes people ungrateful. They simply take the nature of the modern world, which is a unsustainable lifestyle. Here in Govardhan Village, we're trying to show what sustainable lifestyle is just due to this selfish concept of just taking and not being grateful, what to speak of God, not being grateful to material nature, not having that type of even proactive vision that we're taking more than what actually there is. And that's the fact of life. It's sort of an exchange that I have, not with only non-devotees, but with devotees. Because We're also coming, and we're also very much conditioned by this world around us. And we're living in a world, almost everyone is living in the world, in India less, although in Mumbai and Pai more. But in some parts of India, people are living, you've heard of, you know, your eco-footprint. And in other words, how much this planet has to give and how much we're taking. And we as devotees in Europe, in America, in many parts of the developed world are accustomed to living by much more than what this earth produces or what this earth can produce. And ultimately for us, although we talk about sustainable lifestyle and so on, if we want to really live in a way that can continue on for the next 10,000 years, we actually have to bring down our standard of living a lot. 80%? 70%? Who's willing to do that? Don't ask me. But if you see Srila Prabhupada's example, Srila Prabhupada was very much, when he was emphasizing his farming communities, he was really talking about minimizing. I know when Srila Prabhupada had a model for houses, I think they were called Prabhupada cottages, Prabhupada houses in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada drew up the plan, and they were 20 square yards. So when we started in New Rajadam in Hungary, I built two of these houses, and when I tried to build a third one, I had a revolution on my hands. Of course, it's a little different, but of course, New Vrindavan is not any different than Hungary in terms of season. Living in India in 20 square yards is easy. You see that people live outside. Everything can happen outside. You can cook outside. You can sleep outside. You just store your valuables inside. But having a family with 2-3 kids in 20 square yards, it's a challenge. I think my room up here is bigger than 20 square yards right now. But that was Srila Prabhupada's vision, that we're grateful for what we have, and by being grateful we don't take more, because our society is based on greed. And that's very much instilled in the world around us. We're trying to give up that type of greedy mentality by being satisfied with what we have and actually downscaling. But to really downscale in a way that we're living in harmony with what the world has to offer, anyway, it's inconceivable. It'll be something that Krishna's going to have to organize or orchestrate in order to get what to speak of the outside world to accept, to get devotees to accept. But anyway, that's one type of ungratefulness. People are not satisfied with what their quota is. Everyone's got their quota. No, I want more. I'm not satisfied with this. I want more. Someone else starves. It doesn't matter. Let him starve. I may turn a paradise, say for instance Mauritius, I may turn Mauritius into a sugar plantation, which is what it is, and that was of course done by the British, who've done a lot more harm to this world than many other so-called aggressive countries. I'm digressing, but I'll just cite something that when I get into the discussion on this topic with Govinda Maharaj, he always reminds me. And, you know, there's such thing as a Holocaust, and of course in which 6 million Jews were killed, or perhaps even more, during the Second World War by the Nazi regime. And of course, it's such a touchy issue that you can't use swastikas, which is a real problem in India and the rest of the world. You can't even deny that this thing existed. There are laws that will imprison you if you try to either promote or deny the Holocaust. And yet at the same time, in this country, the British are responsible for killing many times more Indians. But somehow or another, Indians aren't organized enough to protest against that. And one example is during the war, Second World War, when I think it was mostly in West Bengal, and Srila Prabhupada also talks about how the price of rice was going up and up and up and up. And people were starving. They were literally starving to death. And of course, in order to promote consumerism of products originally brought from India, and especially cloth weaved in Manchester and that whole area in England, there were many times in which people actually were starved and suffered, and many, many millions of people died. But anyway, this was Second World War, and perhaps the governor of Bengal was communicating to Winston Churchill, "People are starving here in Bengal. We've got tons of food supplies here, and I think elsewhere also they have food. Says, can we distribute the food?" And Winston Churchill's reply was, because I get back to my original theme, Winston Churchill's reply was, "No, let them starve." He says, "I hate Indians." Documented. Why Hindus don't band together and ask for some compensation in the same way Germans are still paying compensation for abuses that they committed during the Second World War is one of the weaknesses of Hindus. They have a hard time agreeing on things. Anyway, but it's a shame. So, once again, that type of mentality of let people suffer, I don't care, let them die. And of course that's going on in the present day world where we're living in. Many people are suffering. There's 20,000 people going to die today of starvation just due to an imbalance of food. And not just today, because it's a special day, it's happening every day. It's happening every day around the world. And not because there isn't enough, there is enough, but because some people are living beyond the means of the other. Back to ungratefulness. Ungratefulness is also a quality that comes as a result of offensive devotional service. And it's something that one has to be careful for. In fact, Jiva Goswami points out that aside from faithlessness, weakening of sadhana, increasing of material desires and other obstructions, this one is the most difficult one, because you can't actually overcome this ungratefulness solely by sadhana. You need actually to have service and association of great Vaishnavas. Otherwise, as it states here, the unrighteous man finds it difficult to propitiate him. It becomes impossible to overcome that type of mood and reaction. So of course, even though the gopis questioned, "Are you grateful or are you ungrateful?" Of course, they didn't speak like that. They spoke in a little indirect way, but Krishna got the message. He understood what they were saying. And no, Krishna pointed out, I wasn't ungrateful, I'm just trying to increase your love for me by keeping that separation. But the essential point here that Srila Prabhupada says is that we need to be grateful. We need to be grateful for what Krishna has created in this world and the resources we have. The air is free, the water is free, in fact everything is absolutely free. Civilization means that we've learned out many systems to pay a lot of money and work very hard for things that are free. Wheat that's free, it grows freely on the ground, vegetables, fruit, everything comes freely off the tree. You go there, you pick it off, you eat it. Advancement means what? You live in the city with water you can't drink, with air that you can't breathe. You have to have bodyguards in order to walk down the street, either day or night. You sit in 4 hours of traffic all day long. You work to make a lot of money. I get good salary so that you can pay $5 for an apple. That's free. It's very intelligent. Very, very intelligent. And ultimately, everything is free. Then Krishna is providing things. You have to put some time and energy in, but it's relatively free. I was, just before I came here, I stayed at Sridhar Prabhu's place, and he told me he goes out and he's part of the eye clinic that goes around Vrindavan. And he just told me a little anecdote. They were going around Vrindavan, and he's always seeing that morning, noon, night. Some of these people are just sort of laying around on cots, and they're not doing anything. They're not so very active. He says, what goes on around here? Of course, you notice that the ladies are working. The ladies are always busy, but the men, either they're playing cards or dice or just sitting. So he explained to me the Hindi. He used the word kaam, means how come no one's working, right? And so he asked one elderly gentleman, how come no one's doing the kaam? And he says, because we have no kaam. In other words, he's saying, because we have no lust, we have no desire. So Krishna provides everything that we need. That's why we don't have to do anything. Of course, another way of saying it, our wives are doing everything else. So yes, if Krishna's already providing. And just in conclusion, obviously, not just because it happens to be the 50th anniversary, but that certainly is something that brings to the fore our obligation and our gratefulness to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada has given us Krishna consciousness, and we're here just by Srila Prabhupada's grace. We have each other's association, the Lord's service, chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam, and we have the blessing to be able to sit in GBC meetings and hammer out possible solutions to problems. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. And grateful. Well, it comes to mind one letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to disciples, I think, who wrote to him, and then I was from Los Angeles, that if you all feel obliged to me, in other words, if you're grateful, then you'll preach enthusiastically like me. Don't fight. Cooperate. These are signs and requests that Srila Prabhupada asked of us to show our gratefulness and not to make him into a Alexander who conquered the world, died at a young age, and when he died, then his generals divvied up the empire, and of course very quickly it also collapsed. So we can't help but be grateful to Srila Prabhupada, and of course that gratefulness, just like if we say really being grateful for what Krishna gives us, may mean we have to plan out a different type of lifestyle, live in a much simpler way than we may be living in Mumbai or London or New York or other places, even in our communities, but still farming communities. But still that gratefulness that Srila Prabhupada that we're obliged to reciprocate with Srila Prabhupada is something that we must show. And as it's stated here, how will we show it? Through service. And service in so many ways, Swadharma. Everyone has their own dharma, and by performing one's own service, then everyone attains siddhi. So Krishna says, whoever performs their own service, your own allotted service, and one attains perfection through that. And ultimately, that then becomes our real opportunity to archanam, bandhanam, dasam, sapya, atmani, vedadam. These last three are actually more than just limbs of sadhana bhakti. Generally, they're identified more with transcendental devotional service. But it's that service that allows us to be recognized by Krishna, to be appreciated by the acharyas, to get blessings of Srila Prabhupada, and in order to overcome what other possible obstacles there are in our quest to go back home, back to Godhead. I'll just conclude there. Unless any other revered Vaishnavas, if you'd like to add something or comment on something, Hare Vilas Prabhu put up his hand. How will I hear? Oh, there's a microphone. But just imagine when she, excuse me, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leading these great kirtans, there are always probably thousands, tens of thousands of people. There's no loudspeaker. Of course, he's God, so he's facilitating those kirtans, but they were doing it without eco-friendly microphones.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Maharaj, for inspiring us with your words. In the episode of Srila Prabhupada, of the British famine in Bengal, Srila Prabhupada was thinking, and Krishna says, Kaunteya pratijam vijami bhaktapanasyati. Declare boldly, Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. However, many people were dying of starvation at that time, World War II, 1942, that period. It was a artificial famine because the British had purchased the entire stock of rice and they impounded it in godowns and it was guarded by the British army. So Prabhupada went around and asked all the Vaishnavas, how are you doing? Are you eating? Is everything all right? And even though so many people were dying, every Vaishnava he questioned was somehow or other by the grace of Krishna. Subsisting.
I remember Prabhupada talking about that.
So it just shows that we have to have faith in Krishna's words and stick to our standard of practicing Krishna consciousness. And somehow or other, it might be mysterious, might not be rationally understood. The devotees will prevail by Krishna's mercy.
Thank you. Yes, I think that's a 77 conversation. Because when listening to the Prabhupada talks about that. 77 Prabhupada reminisces a lot. Prabhupada liked to reminisce. New York days, early days. Someone else, any other comments, questions? Looking at Swami Maharaj.
Yeah, but it deserves it not being much of it to a lot. So one Prabhupada I heard this was in London in a press conference, and the press asked, why have you come to our country? But you also came to our country without this. So, the Prabhupada responded that, yeah, you came, your voice came, And whatever is valuable, you thought was valuable, you stole, you looted, whether it was rice or silk or diamonds or whatever you thought was valuable. But then Prabhupada added saying, the real wealth of India that you ignore, you left that behind. And I have come to do the home delivery. So when what is that? Our voice starts to recognize the real wealth of India and you left that behind. Then he referred to India's culture, ancient culture, India, the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita and the holy name, like that. This is the real wealth of our nation, and also you did not give us much. You took everything. But Prabhupada was here. We are still grateful. Like the last verse that you were saying, whether you give or not give, or aslisha patratam, we are giving it. So here it is, take this culture, take this. Mahamantra, take this.
Hare Krishna. For those for room, or you want to try to clear the British reputation? Because an Irishman, you wouldn't want to do that.
That would be very difficult. When you were speaking, I was looking to my right at some devotees, but then I realized that, Gauri, of course, is Scottish, so that's okay. He won't be defending. Prabhupada and Shruti, of course, are red. No, I was just going to say that, just in case you're not aware, that what happened in Bengal in the 1940s, the British, they had a lot of expertise in, because about 100 years earlier, they did the exact same in Ireland, 1858, where the population over a two-year period went from 6.5 million down to 1.5 million. Because of the potato famine, and they did the exact same. They had huge stocks of grain, and they were begged to release them, and they refused to do so. So it was a repeating pattern. But actually, that was just a little comment. A devotee said to me yesterday, we were talking, and we were agreeing that this is an absolutely beautiful place, absolutely wonderful, wonderful place. And then this devotee said to me, the only problem is that it's too hot to enjoy. It's just too hot to enjoy. Particularly now it's okay, but in a few hours time, whatever. And particularly the humidity. But of course that aids what you spoke about, that you live outside. You can cook outside, you can sleep outside, etc., etc. But talking of the British thing, and of course this country is even further north than Britain, Sweden and Iceland, with an appropriate name, even though there's another country further north than Iceland called Greenland, to make sense of that, I don't know. But anyway, Iceland and countries like that you can't sleep outside. Oh, if you sleep outside, then it's, you'll call it suicide. Yeah, the polar bears can. So as a result of that, you need to live inside. And to live inside, you need a brick house. And not just a brick house, but you need a brick house that has heating, etc., or whatever. And as we know, Chanakya Pandey says the three things that you have to deal with immediately are fire, debt, and disease. But the Western system is that if you want to have somewhere to live other than the street, you have to get a thing called a mortgage. And those things tie you in for your whole life. Actually, a few years ago, during the boom years, they were offering 45-year mortgages. How hellish. 45-year mortgages. So people living on a minimum wage, they have to work for 50 years or more like that. So just in the context of this reducing your living requirements and your living needs, how do you do that in a country that doesn't have a climate like India or similar to India? It almost seems that we shouldn't be living in those climates.
Well, just a response to that last point, I've not seen it, but I've heard from other Vaishnavas that the statement, or at least it's generally understood, that people should not live where palm trees don't grow. And but they have. They did do it. They did live in villages before our whole city civilization, our industrial revolution. People did live in these countries under much different circumstances, in much simpler way and a very sustainable way. They maintained themselves. Industrial revolution is what made everything unsustainable. And then from there we've got the technology revolution and so many other revolutions until we blow ourselves up. But at that time, not in India, but in these other countries, in a very austere way, they ate meat and they did other things because we couldn't grow anything. And even the things that, you know, you eat preserves 6 months out of the year. But they were able to do it. They did live in a very simple lifestyle. When we first moved in Hungary to New Brajadam, everything that we know now we learned from the local villagers. And when we moved there, there was no gas in the place, there was no sewage lines, and everyone was working out of a well. Now, you know, they've got electricity, so that means that they've got piped water into the homes. But it required a certain psychology. We also did that. Now we've got piped water also into the houses. But when we first, in the first 5 years, we only had wells. It was an easy thing convincing devotees to go out in the snow to pull water from a well, take and then heat that up and to form Mangalarti. That's the real effort for Mangalarti. But that's the result. We're sitting in these, living in these climates. And it's inauspicious. It's sinful. That's why this is the most pious birth. And having taken birth there, we're unfortunate. But still, we try to make the best of what we got. But go back 100 years, 200 years, it was a whole different world. It's a world that we're not even familiar with. Even as much as 100, the turn of the beginning of the 20th century, Budapest was sort of built. It was called the second Paris of Europe, because like Paris, after the Paris fire, Paris was sort of built up from scratch. And Budapest is also designed until the Germans and Russians bombed it to pieces. But it was built by design. And no one owned anything. There was no proprietorship. Proprietorship is a whole new concept that came in within the last 100-150 years in the world. What we call the feudal system means that everyone in the world, everything was owned and managed by kings and landlords. People had hereditary rights, but they had no rights to the land. They just paid tax to stay there. Things have changed a lot, and now, of course, janasimohayamahamneti. But we should stop, because we need to break. And Hare Krishna, thank you so much. Good approach, Prabhupada.